Sex Positive Talk, where shame ends and nothing is off limits. Brought to you by Advocating for Sex Positive Education and Consent Culture, EmpoweredHearts.com, and GTFORadio.ca. I'm your host, Angel, queer femby, sexuality educator, and sex coach. So Shannon, welcome back, everybody. This is Sex Talk. We're here to continue this conversation. If you didn't listen last week, you're going to want to pause here and go back and listen. Shannon introduced us with a very thorough introduction, so thank you for that, to the concept of being present and how we can tie that presence into just a profound experience with another person. And we're relating this to kink, but I know there's a lot of other activities that people can engage in. You've talked about yoga and that kind of stuff, and we're just going to continue on the conversation. So welcome back. You know, because I was at that stage where I'm starting to become aware that my body's having a reaction, but not at the stage where I can recognize what the message is. And like that kind of thing really opened me to exploring some of the messages we have about what is attractive, right? If you know, romances, like society, movies, everything teaches us that ickiness that a person can send to our psyche that we recognize subconsciously, right? Our body will alert us to it, but we are actually taught that that might be attraction.
Yeah.
Right? Because you feel something. So obviously it's going to be okay, right? Because we're not allowed to dislike people, especially not people showing an interest in us, right?
Totally. Yeah.
And he turned out to be a predatory sort of person. So like just verbalizing that to someone that I don't know what this message means helped me, one, to pay more attention to my body. And two, it allowed the part of my brain that doesn't usually tell me messages to send messages about what I was noticing. So I picked up on all these little microaggressions that this person had, and I was able to go, oh, is that interesting? So I find boundary pushing might trigger a thought that I think I'm attracted to the person. Right? That's, and then from there, I was able to have a healthier relationship with the messages my body was sending. Right?
Wow. That is so profound. You're right.
It was like a changing point in the way I perceive the messages that my body sends. So now when I get a strong message, I know to take time to not assume that that's a person I need to interact with. Like this might be a warning.
Yeah. And we kind of talked about this a bit last time where, you know, some things are unnecessarily coupled in our brains. And for myself personally, I had fear and love coupled just based on how I was raised. Because, you know, my parents also gave me a lot of messaging around like how, well, we're making you afraid of this because we love you, because that's what keeps you safe. And I used to pick partners subconsciously where I was always afraid for their well-being because they were self-destructive in some way or another, because I just had this pattern where fear comes with love and love comes with fear. And even though they weren't abusive towards me ever, the fear was still present. It just wasn't for my well-being. It was for their well-being. And I used to, and I still do love traveling, but then my bestie and I kind of sat down and talked about it because she also likes traveling. And when I was discovering that fear and love are coupled inside of me, and I was like, oh my God, I think that's also why I love traveling, because it is fearsome to be somewhere by yourself with no safety net, nobody you know, often in a place where they don't speak your language, but then I'm invigorated by it. And we started talking about all of these things, and it was funny because weeks prior to that, we did this exercise where we printed off a bunch of cards, and they were like value cards, and we were placing them into like important, not important, somewhat important. And both of us placed safety as not important at the time. And we kind of noticed that, and we're like, huh, what's that about? Considering that safety is so fundamental. And it grew into this whole conversation about how we didn't get to allow ourselves safety throughout most of our lives because it wasn't an option. Like, we couldn't choose to have safe parents. We couldn't choose to have safe, you know, schooling. Like I was bullied in school at some point. So safety was not a choice often. So we've learned to, and I've learned to detach myself from how important I find safety. Mm-hmm. And so considering that in somatic experiencing, like safety is fundamental, like nothing happens if you don't feel safe. It was just a big eye opener for what we find attractive and pleasant. And as we talked about last time, sometimes we recreate these traumatic patterns and they become familiar and they become attractive because they're familiar, because there's this like false safety that familiarity creates. It just, because it's predictable. You kind of know the outline of this interaction and that makes it desirable because you're like, yeah, I've been on this roller coaster. I can take it again. It was thrilling when it was thrilling. When it was bad, but that's okay. I'll do the thing for the thrill because I'm learned to be attracted to it. And what's, especially for people who have had traumatic experiences, what's actually really deeply uncomfortable is being nourished and safe and seen and considered and having someone, you know, check in with you and be like, before I do this, is this okay? Or did you change your mind about this? Or is this still something you wanted to do? The first time that I started encountering partners like that, I was deeply uncomfortable. And the crazy thing is, instead of being like, yay, I've evolved to a point of having responsive partners, what came up for me is like, why don't they want me more aggressively? Like, is something wrong with me? Am I not attractive enough right now that they have to stop and check in and ask me all these questions? I took that as offensive that somebody didn't crave me so intensely that they were willing to blow past my boundaries. I took that as an insult to my appearance and to my worth, that they treated me like a whole human. And I had to teach myself that that experience is actually safety. That, you know, you have to kind of uncouple all of these things. Yeah. And again, that comes with tracking. So when you were saying that you had this experience of like, I can't tell if I'm disgusted by you or attracted to you, sometimes that might have been the same feeling and they've always just come together. So, but recognizing that it's not one feeling, attraction, that it can actually be two feelings, creates space for you to then separate.
Just take it. Oh, you're okay. Four more minutes. So 14, why don't you
40.
Okay. Sorry. He's going to interrupt this in 40 minutes because he's got to go back to work. So I get a kiss before he leaves.
Oh,
so it works.
So wonderful.
Yeah.
See? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily one emotion, even though we might experience them simultaneously. So mm-hmm. having to be able to pull those apart and go, oh, it's like there have been times in my past, particularly in my childhood, where these two things went together, particularly if you experienced any sort of sexual abuse as a child. Mm-hmm. And for me, I did. So like it makes sense now that I've unpacked it, that I was assuming that that disgust meant sexual attraction, right? That they had to be coupled. Right. So if I'm disgusted, I must be attracted to you. And the only reason I think I noticed it is because my partner then and now is super respectful of boundaries, is one of those people that, I mean, and not that we were ever perfect. Like we've had to do a lot of growing and we continue to grow, but I didn't ever have that revulsion feeling. You know, and I was in a place where I was ready to celebrate me and who I was. And I approached dating completely different than I had ever approached it before, where I was like, this is what I want. And I was blunt with what I want. I advertised exactly what I want. And when people didn't give me what I want, I told them, that's not what we agreed to. And you're a jerk. I don't want to see you again. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is why. And they argued, oh, but you know, blah, blah. No. Not interested. And when I met Mark, he was exactly who he said he was. And I broke every dating rule I ever have had with him. Like I went home with him the first night in his vehicle from a coffee date and forgot to answer the phone for my safety. Like he just blew me away. And it was that everything we did was guided by me, you know? Like it was, and not that he was like submissive, you know, didn't know what to do or whatever, but it was like, all these pauses where he was like visually checking in with me, and I was like, right?
Yeah.
And so having that space, that few years with him before this incident, allowed me to question what my automatic thoughts were around that feeling of revulsion. It was like, like, this is, something's not right with this feeling, right? So yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And for, you know, everybody who's listening, this is such a necessary skill, because like I said, you don't have to ever doubt yourself again, because your mind is so elusive and it can go wrong in so many ways and so be misinformed in so many ways. Yeah, but your body doesn't. Your body is always in the present, and it always knows how you really feel. And when you learn what those, and it will give you signs. And that's why it's important to learn what those signs mean. It's like you're learning a whole new language. And you being able to name disgust and attraction in the same package, that's very insightful and apt. And if you're listening and you're like, man, like, I don't even know what more common emotions feel like. I don't even know what fear feels like for me in my body. I want to remind you that as you start tracking your body, so yes, start with the pleasant stuff, but you also don't ever have to pinpoint emotion in the beginning, because maybe you just use sensory language and that's enough. Maybe you just go, my body feels really hot when I do this one thing, like just physically, temperature-wise hot. Or when I talk about this thing, there's like a lump in my throat that comes up and I can't quite push it down. It's like, it's something that, you know, really gets stuck in there. And you don't have to know what those emotions are, but that's a sign. And you might not know what that sign is until later, but noticing that this is a part of the language still makes a difference. It's like
the door, you know?
Yeah. Like that first time when I received a message on FetLife and I had that weird feeling, which I found out then was because they were dating in secret. The second time I identified that feeling sooner, because I had the same feeling, and I asked them directly, I was like, does your partner know you're dating? And they avoided the question a couple times, and I kept asking it very directly. And then they were like, well, no, they don't. And I was like, huh, see, at the time I didn't know what that feeling was. But when it came back, I was able to recognize it. And like, in somatic experiencing, they do invite a lot of sensational language, because sensational language is embodied. If something is hot or cold or spacious or dense, or, you know, if it has upward mobility, downward mobility, if it's spreading or shrinking, all of these things are very visceral. And it's more important for you to notice them than to interpret them. The interpretation part will come naturally later. Because then with experience, like, you're experiencing things all day, every day, and you'll just know what those signs mean because you'll be more aware of them. So don't feel like you have to really like pinpoint all the emotions that are going on when your body gives you signals, because it will come. It will just come.
That's beautiful. Cool. How to overcome that resistance, just pick something that's comfortable, practice experiencing those pleasant sensations and recognizing what about it makes you feel comfortable. Like, what about it is pleasant, right? Whether it's a smell, a blanket,
And then you will naturally have experiences throughout your day and then kind of notice it. Like, it's the same question every time. Like, if I'm feeling a bit agitated, like, how do I know I'm feeling agitated? What about it? Is it my heart rate? Is it that, like, my face kind of gets scrunchy and annoyed? Is it how much heat there is in my neck? Like, how do I know? Or, you know, you're having a conversation with a friend and all of a sudden, like, they say something that will either feel good or not good. And how do I know that something changed right now? Is it that they mentioned a person that I know, or because they said it this way, or just this question that you can keep coming back to is, how do I know that this is how I feel? And something for kink that's specifically important is that you will also learn your cues for hunger and satiation. I think that's very, very important. And you did touch on that earlier as well when we talked about, you know, how sensation seeking can become its own hamster wheel or its own track. And we kind of lose sight of what that was meant to be, and we lose the embodiment. We're just chasing the accomplishment of tolerating more and more and more.
It's like, level up.
Yeah. But you know, many wisdom traditions around the world, which were conveyed to me by some of my yoga teachers, talk about how everything is medicine. Everything is medicine. So you don't take a medicine past the point that it's served. So you don't keep taking your antibiotics after you've done the course and the thing is not bothering you anymore. You know, once your bones fuse together and heal, you don't wear your cast anymore. Everything is medicine, and there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. So once you start refining your relationship with your body and tracking its signs and interpreting its cues, and then you can actually ask it questions. You can be like, when you feel desire for someone, like you're texting with someone and you want to see them, you can be like, how do I know that I want to see them? Like, where in me is yearning? How do I feel it? And when you're in an interaction, then how will you know if you've had enough? Like, what will your body tell you, or how will you sense that your yearning has been answered and you're now satiated? Because beyond the point of satiation, that's at best not serving you. And at worst, it can lead you to dissociate from your body. Because here your body goes, I'm full and I'm done. And you're like, no, stay here and take more. And that, you know, like that can even be traumatizing, because that's what trauma is. Too much, too fast, against your will. And here you are in an experience that might have been chosen at first, and past the point where your body is done, if you continue it, you are neglecting again your body's cues, and you are again distancing yourself from how closely you feel yourself. And it might be a bit hard to notice cues of hunger and satiation in an interaction with a human, so you can practice with other things in your life, like literally food. Or if you have furry friends, either your own or someone else's, and you see them and you're like, oh, I want to touch them, and notice that yearning. And then when you touch them and you pet them, how will you know when you've had enough? And notice when there's kind of like this natural tendency to be like, oh, okay, I'm physically done touching you, but I want you around. You know?
And you make this sound so easy. You do. You make it sound so easy.
It's not hard, but it does take consistency and persistence. So yeah, like for anybody who feels like this is becoming daunting or it's too many steps, it's not always going to feel like too many steps. Now that you have this in your awareness, it's just going to pop up randomly. You're going to be, you know, driving, and all of a sudden somebody's going to be like trying to swerve into your lane, and you'll have this fear wash over you, and you'll be like, I know I'm afraid because there was just this huge rush of heat in my body. And because now you just have the seed for paying attention, you'll do it passively. Or, you know, you'll bite into a really juicy orange or something, and you'll be like, ooh, I know I like it, because all of a sudden, like, my face got broader and I kind of had this like invigoration in my throat or my mouth. And it is a lot of things that happen, but they're happening all the time anyway. So the only difference here is whether or not you're here to see them. So all in all, it's really just one other step, which is just you noticing.
And good news, bad news. Now that you've listened to the two episodes, you're primed, right? Your brain has been primed with this information. You can't unlearn it. I think it's really important to like recognize that there's going to be there's a little pain in losing ignorance, you know, because you are going to find you have to verbalize boundaries, and that it's a lot harder to be numb to things. So you're going to feel more, and not all of those feelings are going to be the sexy, fun subspace of an incredibly mutual kink experience, but. And that's okay, because that's actually how we learn and grow.
Yes.
Feeling both.
And as you discover the skill, I also want to mention that you are going to blow past your boundaries. It's just going to happen. you're going to start noticing more and more of your body's boundaries, and you're going to have to learn how to assert them. So there's kind of like several stages in which you will naturally progress. One is tracking, which is where you'll just notice your cues and what your body does and how it talks to you. Then interpreting the cues, being like, oh, when I feel this way in a sensory way, that actually means this. And then it's asserting those boundaries so that when you know you hit a boundary and it's clear to you that you've hit a boundary, being able to speak it is a whole other ball game. And it's going to need for you to overcome a lot of previous conditioning, because even the way that most people are parented in this world is like founded upon you constantly crossing your boundaries and them telling you you should and them telling you you're supposed to. So there's going to be some unlearning where it's going to be clumsy. And however easy I might make all of this seem, like, I have gone through that very messy process. I did go to a swingers club and had an experience that was not what I wanted. And while I was in it, I was noticing all of these cues and I didn't speak up for myself. And it was really easy for me to then shit on myself and be like, oh, like, how dare I? Here I am studying all these things, having been through what I've been through and having learned what I've learned. And here so, I am.
Did you read my bio?
What's that?
I feel so called out right now.
Oh, and that's why I'm saying it, because, yeah, you know, like, there's this kind of expectation that once you learn all these things, you're going to be this purified being who will do all the right things. And no, there's no reason for you to be good at it right off the bat. Like, there's no reason for you to be good at a new skill. And this is going to be a new skill. And however masterfully I speak about this, it has happened several times where I blew past my boundary and I knew it while I was doing it. And then I justified it away. In the moment, I was like, oh, but I'm already here. And this is a type of experience I want to experience anyway. I didn't think it would be happening today, but I guess I might as well.
Yeah, it's already started and I don't want to ruin it for them. And
And they're not being malicious. They just want me more than I thought they would. They're, you know, like, they're not escalating this experience because they're dicks. Like, they just genuinely are interested in me. And, you know, I might as well enjoy it. Or if I can only just, I know I've hit my capacity, but if I can only just try and flex it open right now for this moment, so I can like temporarily broaden my capacity. And isn't that what this is all about? Is that I grow capacity? And I would just go through all these things. And then, you know, a few days later, I'd have this like sinking sensation. And I was like, ugh, all of that justifying didn't actually do the thing I wanted it to do. Turns out I can't just negotiate during the scene. And I thought I could. I thought I'd be able to, and then I couldn't. And it will take you some time until you have refined the skill, and that will be okay. Because trust me, if this is a skill you're learning, you have blown past your boundaries hundreds of times by now. And here you are listening to this conversation and sitting where you are being a whole human. And ultimately you're bigger than this and you're going to be fine. But remember, when it happens, it might feel more vivid once you know that your boundaries are crossed. And like you said, Angel, there's some comforts in the ignorance and you no longer have that luxury. Now you'll just know when it's happening and it will feel shitty. And you just have to remain compassionate with yourself and remember that this is a new skill and you deserve time and space to learn it.
So we talk a lot about self-compassion when we're learning about bodily autonomy and consent. And I think it's important that exactly what you're saying, like, you're going to feel like you should have been able to do better because now you have this information. But knowing something and being able to bring that outside of yourself is a different skill. Mm-hmm. And that too, you can practice. And that's why I was writing notes. I'm actually going to create us a workshop where we can practice on our own and then with someone we trust, setting those physical boundaries in a way that can translate to intimacy.
That's awesome. Because, very, very necessary.
Yeah. And I'm just profoundly blown away by the amount of reflection and vulnerability and research that you've done into all of this. Like, this is, my heart feels so good.
Oh, how do you know that your heart feels so good?
I know, because I want to laugh and not just my usual, ha-ha, you know, but yeah, my chest feels like full and light at the same time.
That's beautiful. And see, that's tracking. And once you learn the skill of kind of like, here's the cue and here's the emotion, you can also reverse engineer it later. Because if you're ever looking for a specific kind of experience, like if I'm looking for friends or partners who make me feel really lighthearted and seen and present and invigorated, I can actually just close my eyes, imagine feeling that way, and notice what sensations come up in my body and be like, oh, when I imagine feeling lighthearted and spacious and present with someone, there's like a flutteriness in my solar plexus. My belly feels wider, like my throat feels open and spacious. I have the desire to smile and my eyes kind of soften. There's less pretense in my face and it's more like receptive, I guess. So you can reverse engineer cues of your bodies where you give your body a prompt and then see the cues so that when you're in an interaction, you can more readily recognize them. Because then you go, huh, I am feeling lighthearted. And you know what? I set out this intention and here I am in this interaction. And turns out I do feel present. And you actually, it's that capacity for learning how to say yes too. Because sure, you're going to want to be aware of your boundary cues. And those are very important. But then you're going to be more in touch with your yes cues too, with your desire cues, with your yearning cues and pleasure cues. And that's just so much more fun to live in those cues when you get to. So, right. So the first thing was slowing things down. Then we talked about tracking. Something else I want to mention is that our mind's desires are not our body's desires. That has been kind of implicit in some of our conversation here, but I want to make it explicit because, as I mentioned before, I'm a very cerebral person and it's really easy for me to over-identify with my mind's goals and desires and to blow past my body in pursuit of those mental goals and desires. I'll give you a personal experience. Right. Actually, I start with a different one. So sometimes you might be in a situation, especially meeting people online, where you talk to them for a while before you meet them. And I was in one of those situations where I was talking to somebody for some time and we even had like a phone call. And so by then, like a lengthy phone call, it was like 2 hours. And by then I had this intellectual, emotional familiarity with them. And that for me is very sexy, and I was looking forward to seeing them and interacting with them. And but then they showed up in my space and all of a sudden I froze, and I didn't realize that here I am having all this intellectual, emotional familiarity with a person, yet for my body they're a stranger. My body is going, a strange man walked into our space and we're now alone with him. What the fuck is going on? And I had to negotiate in that space where I didn't want to overpower my body, but I was trying to like kind of overpower it by telling it like, no, this person is safe. We know them. We talk to them. We're excited for this to be happening, you know? And my body was like, nah. And we kind of sat on the opposite sides of the couch because that's just where my body naturally went. And I was really lucky to have the kind of person on the other end of this couch where he could sense the bit of resistance, and he addressed it, and he was like, I just want to mention that there's no expectation, and if you change your mind, like, I can just go. And also, if you just want to like play board games or just listen to music or just talk about whatever, we can. So he gave me a lot of space for my resistance to exist and for me not to prioritize him.
And it's all nice, guys. I hope you're listening to this.
Yeah, and he identified my resistance before I did, because I was kind of trying to like still mentally wrestle with what's happening without really like getting clear on that, like my body thinks he's a stranger. But he noticed it and he was like, well, you seem a little reserved, which is okay. And I just want to make sure I take away any pressure you might be feeling from me. And it was such a funny conversation because I was like, actually, no, like I would like to escalate this interaction, but I just don't know how, because you feel like a stranger to my body and you're unsafe to my mind. And again, so lucky to have had that experience, because this man was like, well, what would be like a good introduction process for your body, you know? And I was like, well, actually, I think I'd like to receive some safe touch that isn't like sexual. And he was like, would you be okay with extending your legs towards me? And I just like touch your foot and see how that feels. And he like built all of these steps of familiarity. Yeah. Into like my body kind of getting to know him. And he actually encouraged a conversation of like boundaries, but not an explicit one, but like a bodily one, where he was like, if you're okay with it, I would like to try this exercise that might help, where I'm going to keep touching like your legs or your feet. And you can say either yes or no. And if I do something like that you don't want, or even that you do want, say no and see how I react. So that like there's a visceral sense of me saying no and him taking that no properly. And so he was touching my feet and legs and that was still okay. And I didn't, he's like, no, for this to work, you have to say no. And I was like, well, this actually feels good, so I don't want to say no. And he was like, okay, what could I do then that like you don't really want? And I was like, well, maybe take off my sock. And he like reached for my sock and started taking it off. And he was halfway through taking it off. And I did deliberately wait that long instead of just, you know, saying it right off the bat. And then I said, no. And he put it back on. And the kind of safety that I felt in my body throughout this process was just unbelievable. Are you crying? Oh, I love that. So, you know, these people out there exist. And I didn't even know that's the process I needed until I received it. And it was awesome because the more space he created for me and the more space he created for me to say no, I actually started to feel inklings of desire where I'd be like, I actually want this next or that next. And I realized that I had this like subconscious desire to have my back against him, but in a way where it wouldn't be like sexual or anything, that I would just like have my back against him and that would be it. And later I identified that as kind of like my body's ultimate way to develop trust with a new partner, where even when I can't see them or anticipate their motion or anything, like I remain safe and I remain held, and I just need a few minutes in that space with my back against them to really feel like they've got me and they're there and they're not a threat, even when I can't see them. And I voiced that and he welcomed it. And so I just sat there with my back against his chest and we were talking, and I realized that there was still like a bit of resistance in my body that was starting to wind down. And I know from somatic experiencing that, you know, things that are pleasant are pleasant. And also sensory language is very soothing for our bodies because it's the language of our bodies. And so I had him describe a physical space that he has ever been to that he really liked, like everything about it. And then he did. And as I was listening to his description of the space, my body just really sank into his, where, you know, like I still couldn't see him, but I could feel his body and it was safe. And he was describing the scene that was really beautiful. And then I was ready to interact with him, because now the familiarity in my mind and my emotional space felt with him was now shared by my body. And then we could continue. And I was recognizing how rare that also is in this online dating culture, where, you know, you do get to develop this familiarity with someone somewhat before you meet them. And then we just jump into it and we like go straight for it without a second thought, reflecting that for our bodies, that person is still a stranger and our body might need a smoother, softer transition.
This is what we try to explain to people when we talk about consent being so sexy. When you can create space for someone else where you authentically give a crap whether or not they're comfortable, and you prioritize that comfort for both yourself and them, it that is so attractive.
I agree. And you get to remain a person in that interaction, you know? And that's why the section is about how your mind's goals are not your body's goals, because everything is medicine and too much of a good thing is still too much. And ultimately, any experience you might be having with anyone, especially in the kink world, it's going to be received through and by your body and your body only. So you might as well include it in your conversation. You might as well be deliberate at welcoming your body into that space of interaction, and letting it be something chosen, not just for your mind, but for your body as well.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Oh. Yeah. And I had another experience where this was also brought to clear focus for me, where I had another partner who's just so good at delivering whatever I ask and in the exact way that I ask. And then we had this time together where I was getting all these things I was asking for, and I was starting to feel satiated. Like, I was starting to feel full, and it was really confusing for me because my mind wasn't done. My mind was like, let's keep going. Like, I want more of this.
This is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, I asked for it, and now I owe to see this experience through. And, you know, all of these things. And I noticed that my mind and my body were at odds. And now that you're listening to this conversation, you will start noticing that as well. And it will serve as a check-in for where you actually are. And to my greatest surprise, I was able to verbalize, you know, like, actually, I would like to take a pause, and I would like you to spoon me, because my brain wants all of these experiences, but my body is still a timid animal that's new to this kink world, and it needs like check-ins and reassurance throughout that I didn't realize I would need. And I still want the rest of the experience, but I just want that bit of settling into each other before we continue. And it was, of course, granted. And I think that's another thing we also forget, because our boundaries often like come with so much guilt and shame from us being little people intimidated by adults, that as adults, we way overestimate the weight of our boundaries on another person. It's very rare in my experience that a person would hear your boundaries and deliberately abuse them. More often than not, most often, when I voice a boundary, the other person is really glad I did, because they don't want to be a monster. They actually want to share this experience with you, and they don't want to just use you for their own pleasure, because this way you get to come back. And this way both of you get to have a good experience. And it's a regenerative interaction rather than one-sided.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's... And I want to say, because you were talking about, you know, I'm new to this and whatever, but like quite often we hear from people who have experience in the kink community or in kink activities, but not the community. See what happens when you make me cry? I lose my voice.
That's okay.
It is absolutely okay to feel sated without completing whatever the plan was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not the conversation that we hear in society, because we equate what we're doing with kink to the heteronormative scripts of sex. And I mean, those scripts are garbage too, where, you know, it's not done until it's done. And it's like, well, sometimes it is. And that's okay. Yeah. You know, like, and sometimes it's not. And that's okay. Like, you have to give your, well, you don't have to, you can be miserable for the rest of your life if you want to. But when you give yourself permission to listen to those boundaries, I think that's when things can really shift to a positive place.
Agreed. So all of this embodiment conversation is really so worth it, because it's going to impact all of the other areas of your life. And I also wanted to add that as we talk about like cues and how your body's desires are different from your mind's, you also don't have to know what they mean. Like, when your body gives you a desire, you don't have to identify it. Like, I found out that having my back against a man is a way I develop safety, but you don't have to know that. You can just be like, for some reason, I want to have my back against you, and to have you not touch me while that happens, just to have like a steady presence. Will you do that for me? And once they do, some piece of you will be settled, and you don't need to know what piece that was. Sometimes, especially like as we get more embodied, coming from a cerebral place, there might be this need, like this obsessive need to be like, but what does this mean? But I want to know what this is about, and why is it coming up right now? So if that happens to you, I just want to settle your mind and
let
tell
it
you
go.
That one.
Let it go.
Yeah. You know, one day you'll know what that's about. It just doesn't have to be in the moment, because if you start overanalyzing, you lose that connection with your body that's actually telling you what it would like. So stay in the body, let it ask for what it wants, give it the things it wants for as long as it wants, stop them when your body is satiated. And then over the next few days, you'll be like, huh, that's what that was about. Now that this experience is settled and integrated, I actually noticed this piece of me is different. So I guess that's what that was about.
I have to tell you, Shannon, like this is, I so badly want you to create a workshop for people, just introducing them to these steps with allowing yourself to hear what your body has to say and using that to strengthen your connection to yourself. And I think people forget that part of our central nervous system goes through the body. Like, we're so mired in our brain is who we are. And it's true. And our skin and stuff, just a meat sack, right? Like, the way you look doesn't have anything to do with your value as a human being. Absolutely. However, that skin sack has a lot of nerve endings and it gives you a lot of information. And that is just as valid as the information we get by interpreting things with our brain, you know? And yeah, I think we need to shift the way we look at ourselves to our body.
Yeah. And even the reason why the brain and body were separated, it was like, I think back to the Cartesian times where the old timey first anatomists wanted to study the body. And at the time, death and the body, like after death, the body belonged to the church because it was now in the afterlife. And so in order to study the body, they essentially had to like negotiate the space where the church got to keep the soul and the spirit of the body, and the anatomist would get to exhume and dissect the body because it's now despiritualized. Now it is void of the person, so the church can continue to have ownership of the dead person, yet their body had nothing to do with that person anyway, so let's just look at it separately. And that was kind of the beginning of the separation of the body and mind and soul and personhood. And we never reintegrated. We just didn't, because the hard sciences continued along that track. And it was necessary for us to continue seeing the body as separate because we needed the space for the church to allow us to do that medicine and that research. But it's time. Now it's just time for us to reintegrate, because the mind is powerful, but it's also so easy to be misinformed. I can convince you ad nauseum how, you know, this interaction is safe and I'm an honorable person and you should want this and blah, 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 blah. And I might be able to convince your mind. And many people do convince people's minds of all kinds of shit, but I can't convince your body. Your body is going to be here and it's going to be like, nope, this is a hard no for me. Still no, still no. You can say whatever you want, still no.
Yeah.
And your mind is just not as rigid and clear as your body is.
I could argue this talking about some people whose minds are pretty rigid, but the spirit of what you say is absolutely true. And I found myself wondering what the world would be like if, in order to get in power, you had to go through this process where you learn to listen to your body. Because this plays into like so many other ethical things, right? When we learn to listen to our body, we also learn to recognize when we're making a choice that's against our values.
Mm-hmm.
And because that moment of discomfort that we often experience is usually an opportunity to, mm-hmm. and which is why we talk about sitting with discomfort, which is also about learning to be present in your body. Yeah, all ties in. Who thought, right? Who thought that kink could be about ethics and boundaries and spirituality and pure unadulterated joy, you know?
And I think we're getting there. So all those people that give the resistance to your workshops and the kind of work you're doing out in the world, they actually need this knowledge most. And yeah. We'll build the bridge there. You know, they just think that they'd be going from like picking up their kids from school to getting whipped on a cross. And we'll offer a few extra steps in between where it's actually like everyday life skills that can get you to maybe wanting the whipping and maybe not, but still by just, yeah, but by getting embodied, so many other parts of your life will settle into place. And kink is just one way that embodiment blooms, just one. And there's so many others.
Yeah, and it explains a lot too why some people come in to the kink realm and they just soak it up and they like take everything they can from it, and then you just never see them again because mm-hmm. they got what they needed from it, and that needs to be okay. And then for other people, this becomes the medium that they grow the rest of their life around, and that's also okay. You know, it's just mm-hmm. making sure that it's always within what your body wants and in line with your own, you know, your own moral compass.
Agreed.
You're a beautiful human being. I just want you to know.
Ditto, angel.
I have no words for how much I appreciate you being able to have that kind of vulnerability to bring this incredible unpacking of your thought process and your experiences to the folks that are listening and watching. Like, I want you to know, this is going to be impactful for a lot of people. And what I'm going to do, folks, is I'm going to follow up here with Shannon, and we will get an email in case you have questions. We will create a resource list for you. So be able to click that underneath things. So if that's not there right now, make sure that you check back in a couple of days. Let us get it built, because I'll have the video up today. And yeah, enjoy your journey. This is one of the paths to sex positivity and really being able to embody that for yourself and for your partners in a way that's just filled with beauty and growth. And yeah, I have that full cupboard feeling right now. So pretty exciting. Are there any last things you want people to take away before we wrap this up? So many.
Right? I think the last thing I really want to mention is that whatever you pursue out in the world, be it a career or, you know, certain kinds of experiences or whatever you pursue, keep in mind that you're doing it ultimately for the emotional payoff. Like, there's an emotional embodied payoff that you're looking for from whatever you're doing, be it safety, you know, worth, or vibrancy or fulfillment or whatever. At the end, like where you achieve your goal, there's an emotional payout that you're actually here for. And I would encourage everybody to really keep in mind not so much the shape of the experience you're pursuing, but this emotional payoff. Because then if you're trying to, you know, do certain things to really achieve fulfillment, sure, go ahead and get those things, but set your goal on the fulfillment, because then it might come to you in a variety of other shapes that you didn't anticipate. You might have only been pursuing it in your career, but it actually came from like this person you met who's now your best friend, and you get to adventure together in all these crazy ways. It might come to you, you know, by getting a furry friend and really entwining your souls together. So often we mistake the shape of an experience for the real thing. And I think that's where we get lost in kink and in life. So just really stay tuned and aligned to what is the emotional payoff you want. and allow yourself to find that in a million other ways than the one or two you've kept in mind so far. Because the world is so full. The world is so full, and you can get everything you want in way more ways than one.
Beautifully said.
Thanks so much, Angel, for holding space for this conversation and for inviting it in and for setting me on this path, really, in such a visceral way.
I think you would have gotten there in a different way if you hadn't come across us, because it sounds to me like that's just what you were ready for. Although I'm honored to, like I said, to have participated. I'm going to try and not let my ego get too big, because it has been my experience that when we're ready to learn something, there's opportunities that just show up. You know?
I'm glad that my opportunity was you.
I'm glad too. Okay. This is Angel with Sex Talk. I'm logging off now to have a good, happy cry.
Enjoy that cry and enjoy your goodbye kiss from your partner. And for anybody else who has questions, we will include my FET handle in the notes so you can find me on FET Life and ask other things. And who knows, we'll have follow-up sessions and workshops and more podcasts based on the questions.
Absolutely. Thanks, folks. Stay sex positive.